You're listening to the Preacher to Preacher podcast. This week on the podcast, I interview Bruce Ligon. Bruce is the preacher for the Belleville Church of Christ in Belleville, Texas. He is a Texas A&M fan. We'll deal with that towards the end of the podcast. But Bruce is also very special to me personally because Bruce was my preacher when I was a young man, and he encouraged me to preach my first sermon, do my first devotional, and he ultimately encouraged me to become a preacher. So I owe an awful lot to him. I appreciate him and his ministry. And this week on the podcast, he talked to me, and this is more of a discussion than it is a Bible study podcast. You'll find out as you get into the podcast. In recent months, Bruce has been dealing with some health issues, and he wanted to talk about that and how a Christian may face those things and do so and maintain their faith. Let's go hear from Bruce Ligon. Bruce, how are you today?
Adam, I am doing just as fine as I could be doing. It's a wonderful day here in Belleville, Texas.
Well, you look good. It's good to see you. I know these are just audio podcasts for everybody looking, but you can take my word for it. Bruce is looking good, and we're glad to hear that. I know we'll get a little more into this later in the podcast, but you've had a difficult year, and I'm glad to see you're doing better. I'm really glad we finally got around to making this podcast. I hope to do this well over a year ago, and we'll talk a little bit more about why we haven't done it. But Bruce, for those of you listening, and you may not know this, Bruce was my preacher when I was a young boy at the church when I grew up. And so this is pretty cool to be interviewing him about preachers and ministry and different things we may face in life. So tell us a little bit, how did you get into ministry? How did you decide to become a preacher?
I received encouragement, I guess, starting around 12 or 13 years of age, and had opportunities to give those 5 to 8 minute talks. And the more I did that, the more I began to think that maybe this was something that I could do, that I would want to do to make a difference. And then I went off to Freed Hardeman, stayed there for 4 years and graduated. A lot of good training there, but not only the training, the formal training in the classroom, but the associations that I had outside the classroom. But an important part of the training was just doing. You can study, for example, about swimming for years upon years, but if you never get in the water, you're not going to be a swimmer. And so in 1986, I went into full-time ministry in Marshall, Texas.
Oh, okay. So you started in Texas. I didn't realize that was your first work. Yes. So, and how long have you been preaching now?
Well, that's always a hard question. How do you begin counting? If we use the 86 date,
yeah, that
would be 14 and 22. That's 36 years.
There you go. Yeah, it's Monday, so my math brain is not awake yet either. So, but that's quite a long time. So you were at Marshall and in 86, you came to Plain Dealing in what year? Do you remember?
I came January 10th of 95.
Okay. So that you'd been preaching for about 9 years or so when you came here. So yes.
I went to Oklahoma. Stayed there right at 4 years, and then I went near Wichita Falls for a little more than 2 years. And then I made a good decision and came to Plain Dealing and stayed there for right at 14 years.
Yeah, I knew you were here for quite a while. So, well, that's great. Yes. That's great. And now you're at Belleville, Texas. The church there is doing well. And I know they've been good to you. You've expressed that to me, and I know you've been really treated well. So that's great to hear.
Especially in the past year, I can't believe it in many ways.
Well, with
how
with that
done well.
Well, with that being said, why don't we just take a little the moment now and go ahead and you introduce kind of what you wanted to talk about and what we've been hinting about over this last year, and then we can kind of broaden it out from there.
Mm-hmm. I'm relatively young. I'll sometimes say, compared to Methuselah, we're all young. And last fall, that would have been fall of 21, I knew that things weren't right. But we don't like to admit that we're sick. We don't like to admit that we have failings of a physical sense, or any kind of failings. Long story short, about 11 o'clock on December 10th, an ambulance picked me up at my house. And by that night, I was in a hospital in the Houston area. I was severely dehydrated. We did not know the full scope of my problems. They were incrementally, they were found. And I have a blood cancer. I had never heard of it. Now I hear about it all the time. Multiple myeloma. I mean, everybody has it almost, it seems like.
Well, it's probably sort of like that thing of when you buy a red car, you notice everybody else has a red car. Yes. And so it's probably that you'd been hearing about it, but you didn't give it the attention until it affected you.
Mm-hmm. I just hear, like our temporary assistant principal at school, her daughter has been dealing with it. But one of the complications of it concerns the kidneys. And my kidneys almost shut down. That was something else that was very dangerous, right? I guess would be a good way to describe it.
And you spent, how long did you end up spending in the hospital? Do you remember that? Or I know
I was in facilities for 9 weeks. I've sometimes said that I almost had to get change of address cards.
Yeah, because I knew it was. So that's a little over. That's right at 2 months or a little over 2 months. I mean, you're talking about an extended stay.
December 10th through February 25th.
Yeah, that's an extended stay for sure.
Santa Claus came to see me in the hospital.
Wow, and so that was something you've never dealt with. This you'd never been in any sort of an extended hospital stay or anything like that.
No.
And so a pretty big punch to the gut, I guess.
It was. It was unreal. I mean, you're there in the hospital. Like it was just a few days before Christmas. I'd had a couple of biopsies done. And well, the first biopsy, and the doctor thought that, I think you have this. I think you have multiple myeloma, but they wanted to do another biopsy. And sure enough, that's what I had. And that was just a few days before Christmas.
Wow.
When a doctor comes to see you on Christmas Day, that's not the norm.
Right. And your whole, I guess all your expectations, everything you had planned and had prepared for the holidays, and, you know, you have to throw all that out of the window, and now you're in a totally different mode. So I'm sure it's just 9 levels of disorienting and disconcerting and depressing and everything else. I mean, it's got to be just an emotional sandwich that you just ate.
I want to say something that may come off as strange. Fortunately, I did not always have fully aware of what was going on.
Right. Well, sure.
One day, one of my favorite preachers, John Baker, he and his wife came to see me on New Year's Day. And John was of immense help to me. I don't have any family here. My nearest family is 500 miles away.
Wow.
I told him, I said, do you think I could preach? No. I said, I think I could stand up and preach, you know, put verses together and stuff like that. He said, no, you couldn't. I didn't like that. Was an insult to me.
Yeah, because you're a preacher. That's who you are.
But he said, Bruce, where are we? We're in Tyler. He said, no. Well, where are we? Now, you know me well enough that under normal circumstances, I would have had some kind of comeback. I would have said, John, you don't know where we are? If you don't know, I'm not going to tell you.
Right, right.
But John said, where are we? Second attempt, I said, we're in Longview. He said, no, this is not good.
Right.
I said, John, where are we? We're in Katy. That does something to your mind.
Man.
We like control. I could tell stories, people with drug problems talk about hallucinations.
Right.
I don't have to talk to you about hallucinations. I don't have to go read a chapter in a book or go online. I can testify.
So you swam in that pool now. Back to an earlier discussion about something that's theoretical versus practical. You've lived that.
Yeah. It was wild.
So, obviously you let's just fast forward to the end of this story and then we'll come back and talk about kind of how it affected you and how you got through that. So how are you doing now? You're on a really good road right now, right?
I have a great team of doctors, and my main oncologist, he told me, he and the nurse practitioner, they did not give me much hope to survive. But things began to turn around slowly. And things began to look a lot better around April and May. I don't know what the man is religiously. I know he is on some level a person of faith, but he said this is because of the Lord and us working through him. And by the end of August, I've been in complete remission.
Man, that's amazing. That's wonderful. That's great to hear. And we just passed.
That's what he says.
Yeah. And we just passed the 1 year because you said December 10th. I was trying to pay attention. It's right. The 12th as we record this. It probably won't be released on the 12th, but mm-hmm. We're recording this on December 12th. So you've just hit that 1 year milestone.
Yes.
So,
and I have thought a lot about it. You know, December 12th would have been that Sunday. There are things that I remember, Adam, and there's a whole lot of things I don't remember. I've been told a lot of things that took place when I was in the hospital that I have no memory of them happening.
Wow. Yeah, it's kind of, I guess when you stay in a hospital for 9 weeks and you're dealing with things like, I know just from my experience from visiting people and having nurses in the family, when your body goes into something like sepsis, when your kidneys aren't functioning correctly, when your potassium gets out of whack, like you say, you had hallucinations. So I'm sure you may have lost days or even multiple days at a time. You're disoriented. Is it day or night? Is it Monday? Is it Wednesday? When you're going through that, was that a strain on your faith? I mean, as a preacher, you'd think here's a guy who's going to really dig in and rely on the Lord, but I have to believe, and you may not want to talk about all this, but I have to believe that put a pretty big strain on your faith at that point in time. Like, where are you at, God?
Mm-hmm. Because this is an experience I've never had before.
Right.
And so you have a new situation to deal with. Now you've got to bring faith into dealing with it. And again, I'm going to bring up his name, John Baker. was an immense help. I saw him probably 4 days every week. When I needed something, he would bring it from a cell phone charger to a toothbrush and everything in between.
Wow. And so I guess that would kind of illustrate if we are in a situation where we know someone who's going through a health crisis, that we might be the extension or their channel to reach out to God and to know, hey, here's how God's ministering or working in my life. Mm-hmm. Here's where this faith is valuable. I'm trying to, you know, we had talked about before we recorded, you know, hey, what verses can we use to, and, you know, it's not really that this is something we could preach about, but this discussion is something that, yeah, I mean, we could, but obviously you probably do better than me, but what I'm thinking is, you know, this is something that we may all experience or most of us may experience, if not us, someone directly tied to us is going to go through a situation like this. Mm-hmm. And this isn't something you just get up and preach and say, hey, here's how you deal with this. Cause it's going to be different for everyone. So,
right.
So
one thing that, as we were talking, it makes you humble. I mean, we're used to going hither, there, and yon and doing basically what we want to. And when you can't get out of bed by yourself, I remember when it was a big thing, Adam, when I was able to get out of bed by myself.
Wow. Something you've taken for granted the previous however many years, right?
Yes. You know, I had never rolled around in a wheelchair.
Wow.
And I have one now. It's not being used, but I had to learn how to use a wheelchair. I mean, I had to use it. I couldn't walk.
Right.
That was one of the complications of this multiple myeloma.
You know, sitting here thinking about this, I'm just thinking about all the emotional swings that, you know, yesterday in Bible class, we were going through some passages, and one of them I read was Psalm 10 and verse 1, which we were studying on some other things. But this verse says, why do you stand afar off, O Lord? And why do you hide in times of trouble? When you read the Psalms, there's a lot of times where the psalmist is sort of saying, hey, God, why are you letting this happen to me? And why? And so I was thinking, I'm sure as you're going through all this, you're asking, you know, why is this happening to me? Why, what did I do? Was there ever any of that or probably maybe not. I just have to feel like I would really struggle with, you know, hey, I've always been this strong guy. I've always been a healthy guy. Why now? Why is this happening? You know?
I don't know how I would express that point, but something that I believe is related to it, it's easy to read the Bible.
Right.
I'm using accommodative language. It's easy to read the Bible. Okay, this word means this and yada, yada, yada. But when you're in the throes of a difficult situation, if it's divorce, if it's ill health, if it's a family crisis, then these verses, in a very real way, take on new meaning because you're crying out for help, and this is your source of strength.
Yeah, and that I guess that's kind of where I was going is, you know, we read these things like we were reading that in Bible class, but you lived that experience, you know, like, mm-hmm. I need your help. You know, and so you're feeling that, and I'm sure that changes. And the reason I'm asking this is because I think your hope when we recorded this was if someone's struggling with their health, maybe they've thought those thoughts, maybe they're going through mm-hmm. that experience. And I don't know who will listen to this, but perhaps someone will. And so you can say, hey, I was there and I'm now on the other side of it. And mm-hmm. my faith helped me to get back here. And, you know, I didn't abandon my faith in God. I didn't blame God. You're still a person of faith and you still love the Lord, and that hasn't changed. So,
patience is another, challenge. during those times.
I can imagine.
Sometimes nurses had difficulty being patient with me.
Now, I know this about you. You're a traveling man. You get around and you go and do. So what's it like when you go from being busy and active and always going and doing and constantly communicating with people to stuck in a bed?
It was just plumb odd. It was just odd in every way. I'm not a television person, so, and that's just a personal decision. But, and I slept a lot. John Baker took over my Facebook page and putting updates on me. I tried it 1 or 2 days and he read them and he said, I want to do this for you. Last week I read one of the ones I wrote. Wow. It was that bad.
Yeah, well, I see, we were communicating with you from up here. I had messaged you a few times when you were able to get back and get on your mm-hmm. devices and things, and I could tell you were still having some issues with disorientation and things. And so I know he was in fact, I spoke to John and them some and checked in on you during that time, and he was a great blessing. But yeah, I mean, that it just threw your whole world. So I'm sure that's frustrating when you can't communicate what you want. I mean, something you've been doing since you were a child is communicating
yes.
properly. And now you even lose that capability. I'm sure that patience has got to be tested to the very end of its limits, I'm sure.
And there were decisions that had to be made. There were some people who, because of my physical situation, because of my illness, they said, maybe it's time for you to resign your work
right.
with the church in Belleville. I mean, they might as well have just taken their fist and just hit me as hard as they could in the gut.
Yeah.
They weren't trying to get my job, but they didn't think that I would be able to do the work
right.
again. You can talk to any number of people in plain dealing and ask them, is Bruce stubborn? And they'll say, amen. And I was stubborn about that.
Yeah.
And at the last rehab facility I went to, my physical therapist, my doctor, and my case manager, the three of them said, you're ready to go home. I still had some close friends who said, no, this isn't going to work. But I wanted it to work. I thought, right. I want to give it a try. I want to give it my best. I don't say this in a haughty fashion, but if I had submitted a letter to the elders here and said, I'm resigning, they wouldn't have taken it.
Right.
In fact, I mentioned to them somebody who said that I ought to resign. Nobody from here, but they would have, they wouldn't have been happy campers or happy elders.
Well, you know, that speaks so well. And one of the things that I got, the times me and you communicated through all this, was you talked about how that the church was just so incredibly good to you. And I've never been there. I've never met the people at your congregation. Hopefully we can one day. But, you know, I know this about them. They love you and they supported you. And that's something that, you know, let's be honest, there's probably some places that if the preacher gets a diagnosis like this, they're thinking, hey, we've got to find somebody to come in and get back to work. And you know, mm-hmm. and that might be true at secular jobs too, you know, so not everybody who listens to this is going to be a preacher. So maybe you're doing some job somewhere and your work may say, hey, which there are legal protections for that, but not necessarily for right. preachers, right?
You have to recognize those realities. I mean, would the elders have, do they have the right Would they've had the right to tell me, okay, we're going to give you 6 months or 9 months to make a transition? They would have, they have that right, of course. But they stayed with me. Yeah. They and they did so much for me. I didn't even know all that they did for me until I came home. They began to piecemeal some of the things to me toward the end of my hospital stay. But they, I didn't realize the full scope until I started to say until I walked in my house. I was using a walker to get inside the house, and I had to be helped.
Right.
It's been an incredible journey.
Well, if we can learn anything from this podcast, we can learn anything from your journey. I think is we need to make sure that when our fellow Christians, whether they're a preacher or just a church member, goes through some sort of a crisis like this, that the best thing we can do is be there to support them, because you didn't need that uncertainty in your life while you're dealing with your own personal mm-hmm. uncertainties about your health and your future. You know, that they help to give you some comfort and some stability, you know, mm-hmm. while you're dealing with this instability in the other places.
It was difficult in a sense. Well, not in a sense. It was just difficult getting several different viewpoints about what I needed to consider doing. And that was tough.
Sure.
I never gave up on staying in full-time work. Were there times when I had doubts that I could? Yes. I didn't see, in fact, I remember telling John, I said, well, I guess I'll never go to another lectureship. I guess those, I enjoyed going to Focal Point and other places, but I guess I'll never get to go again. Well, to make, as Paul Harvey would say, and now for the rest of the story, in May, I drove to San Marcos and I went to Focal Point. And that was some good medicine.
Yeah.
That was some good medicine.
Well, I'm sure it's really good to be able to go back and to say, okay, I didn't lose all of this. I didn't, all these negative thoughts that, and I guess, when something like this happens, that uncertainty, it just fills your mind with that negativity. And whether you want to call it, the accuser telling us or the devil telling us, hey, you're not going to do, this negative thoughts and the there's no hope there is what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. You didn't have any hope that I'll resume these things. And so when you got to actually go, man, that's got to just restore you.
Only a couple of people, well, only one person knew that I was going. And that was the one and only Mike Bestel. He knew that I was coming to Focal Point. That was it. One thing, Adam, that we hadn't mentioned, preachers are accustomed to going to the hospital to visit people.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And now I was on the other side. And that gave me an interesting perspective. One of our families, one afternoon, came to the rehab facility where I was at the time, and they brought me a gift. And I thought they would never leave. I guess in hindsight, I almost pulled the old Darland Elkins trick. Brother, will you lead us in prayer before you leave?
So you were on the other end. You've learned a little bit about the importance of it, and also, how it can affect you, how you feel about it, all that. Yeah,
I would have felt much better if they had come and stayed 5 or 10 minutes.
Right.
I mean, I don't begrudge them.
Right.
And I know their heart. They're some of my dearest friends here in the church. But that was, I needed to sleep. I was worn out.
You know, I'm glad you said that, because I have had a practice. I've made a lot of hospital visits over the years. And when someone's sick, I normally try someone, it may have been you, I don't remember who even told me years ago, that, you know, you don't want to just sit there, because that person, mm-hmm. they may be in pain. They may be tired, because, you know, they're already, the nurses are coming in every little bit to stick them, mm-hmm. or give them a shot or check their pressure or whatever. And so they're constantly, it's hard to rest in a hospital from what I understand. I've never had to stay. And so someone told me one time, when you go and visit, you know, 5-10 minutes, unless maybe there's a procedure you're waiting to get results from or mm-hmm. something like that. But, so I appreciate you saying that. I've had somebody ask me one time, said, man, you didn't stay very long. And I thought, well, I'm trying not to be a burden, you know, because mm-hmm. I'm sure. And it probably depends on what's going on with the person in the room.
Right.
But anyway, that's an interesting
always
point.
Leave the people wanting a longer visit. I used to have a fellow in when I preached in St. Joe, Texas, in North Texas. His wife couldn't stand it when he would say it to me. And he was just teasing. But if I preached a couple of minutes over, and I really didn't, but he would say, "Preacher, did your needle get stuck this morning?" Because I just kept going. Now, that illustration, that story means nothing to people today under 40 years old.
Well, some of us still remember what that means. So,
yeah.
But I'm a little over 40. So, yeah, I was thinking earlier while you were talking, you know, Proverbs 13:12, and I know you know the verse, hope deferred makes the heart sick. But when the mm-hmm. desire comes, it's a tree of life. And that's, I couldn't remember the exact reference, but I was pulling it up here. I'm sure when you got to do things like go to Focal Point, how was it the first time you got to preach after you recovered?
Well, number one, I was home for 2 weeks before I preached. And I told the elders, okay, this particular Sunday, it was the middle of March, I said, I'm going to preach. And they said, no, you don't have to. I said, I know. And I probably said something like this. I said, if you told me I had to, I wouldn't do it. But I had lost between 45 and 50 pounds. I guess it's scriptural for us to be a little bit humorous on this podcast.
Oh, it's fine.
If it's not, you can erase it.
Well, I hope it is, because we joke all the time. So,
well, so I get to the building. I am just going to be there for 1 hour, and I have to preach holding my pants up with my left hand. We've got a problem. And I stood up, just walked up there to the microphone at the Lord's table. I preached about 15 minutes. I had been, while in the bed, I had just been going over verses. And so I knew what I wanted to say. And then that Sunday afternoon, I ordered a couple of pairs of suspenders. So I no longer have that problem.
But emotionally, I'm sure at the same, well, maybe that was a welcome distraction, but I bet it felt pretty good. I bet, because you probably thought at some point, I'll never do this again. I'll never preach again. I'm sure that had to have crossed your mind, or will, maybe the question, will I ever preach again? Probably popped into your mind.
I looked at it in a couple of different ways, Adam. It was good for me, but maybe just as important, it was good for the congregation. Not to put preachers above the rest of the flock, but when the preacher, someone in that high-profile situation, when they are in the throes of ill health, it does something to the church.
Yeah.
I did not realize that fully until after I came home. And so it was needful for me to get up and preach. And I guess I stood at the Lord's table microphone for about 6 weeks. And then without telling anybody came the Sunday. And again, I didn't tell anybody what I was going to do, but I went into the pulpit. And that was good for the church because they could see that I was making progress.
Right.
So not only was it my situation, but the congregation, I don't know whether to use the word suffered, but they were impacted by the whole situation.
I'm sure they were encouraged. I mean, it's you were a visible, you were a visual parable. I mean, here's someone who had, been near death in a very real sense. Uh-huh. And had recovered, and God had healed and restored. And so, I mean, that's an inspiring parable, a real life parable right there, of God's grace, of healing, their prayers. Hey, they'd been praying for you to be healed and you're now healed. I mean, mm-hmm. that's a really good thing to see and encouraging. So
it brought out some really good things, in the congregation. We're a small congregation, 35 to 40 on Sunday. We have about 6 men who can stand up and preach.
That's pretty impressive.
That is impressive. We have another man, in addition to those 6, who can teach a Bible class. And I've been in his class, and it's wonderful. One of our men who had preached during those 9 weeks when I was out, when I began preaching again, he said, every Sunday I have a sermon outline in my Bible in case you're not able to preach. Yesterday, he used that sermon.
Yeah, you told me before we started recording that you had you missed yesterday because you had a little a little setback or a little spell, whatever. I guess the old timers would have called it a spell, but you had
a spell.
An issue. Yes. But doing better today, and I'm glad you're able to record. Any other thoughts? So we're kind of getting close to the end of our time. Is there any mm-hmm. other thoughts you have about a Christian dealing with illness, maybe specifically in a church or not, just in general? Mm-hmm. Any other thoughts we haven't covered?
Taking perhaps a wider view of this, the importance of being more aware of our fellow Christians. Don't we read in Galatians 6 about bearing one another's burdens and so fulfilling the law of Christ? That's
right.
An easy verse, as your Uncle Wayman would say, that's an easy verse to exegete. But that's one of the hardest verses in the New Testament that we have to deal with.
That's right.
Applying it.
And how can we bear their burdens if we're not aware of them? So that's what you're saying. Right. We need to be watching out.
Or this phrase, now talk about something that gets under my skin. If there's anything that I can do to help you, just let me know. That's useless.
Right.
That's not bearing one another's burdens. I am more sensitive when someone whom I know is dealing with especially a serious illness. Makes you think through things differently.
Yeah, that's a good, and I've probably been guilty of making that same statement. We all have. So, we've all said, hey, if there's anything I can do, let me know. But what we're doing then, we're putting the burden on them to tell us. Mm-hmm. And people don't want to ask. I think in general, you're right. A couple things that I used to do when someone was in a hospital stay, and I don't always do these anymore, because times have changed. But back before they had card readers on Coke machines, I would take a roll of quarters when some family member was having a surgery, and I'd give them a roll of quarters so that the kids or the family members could go buy drinks at the drink or the snack machine. I don't do that much anymore because all of them have card readers on them now. But that's something a lot of people don't have spare change in their pocket to buy a drink while they're waiting on a surgery. And that, I don't know where I came up with that, but There's other things, and people have done things for us over the years, and I've seen other people do things for people. So it's probably good, like you say, to be aware, to think about, hey, how can I help this person? Instead of saying, hey, let me know what you need. You know, maybe their yard needs to be mowed. You know, hey, it's the summer, and this guy normally mows his own grass, but he's had a surgery. Maybe we can go over there and mow his yard, or whatever it might be. You know, there's a lot of things we could be proactive. I think that's what you're saying.
And it's those little things. One of my elders, he asked me, well, he told me, he didn't ask me. He told me, he said, I'll deposit your check for you. And he meant by that, deposit it into my account, not into his.
But that's something that people take for granted. It's that the time it takes to drive to a bank and the ability to drive to a bank and put a check in. You're right. And so that was a huge service for you, but it was a minor thing at the same time. So
until I was taken off of soft drinks, bringing me some ginger ale in the hospital. Oh, that was good. And then when the kidney doctor said, it was good while it lasted.
Yeah, well, you know, we they've done a good job of taking care and doing that. I didn't realize you'd had to have that restricted. I would be in trouble if my Diet Dr. Peppers were restricted, but they probably need to be. But anyway.
What I have gotten with my nurse practitioner, her name is Acton, a wonderful woman. And when I saw her last, and we discussed carbonated beverages, and I said, what about one every month? And so between the 10th and the 15th of every month, I have one carbonated beverage.
Oh, okay.
What is today?
It's the 12th.
I haven't had mine yet for this month. I'm wanting some, but I've got to make it count. I've got to make it count. We'll see. Maybe tomorrow I can get something that will make it count.
Maybe so. Or maybe you can have one today and celebrate recording this podcast finally. Well, I appreciate you giving me your time today, Bruce. And it's good to see you in general. I hope you can make your way up here, or maybe I can make my way down there. They don't let me into Texas very often, but we'll see.
Well, if
they'll let me head that way one of these days.
You can, you know, I can get you a shirt like the one I'm wearing.
Well,
and you won't have any trouble.
I would lose a lot of my audience in this area if I had a Texas A&M shirt. So I'll go ahead and tell everybody, Bruce has got a giant Texas A&M logo on his chest. And so
absolutely.
We save that for the end of the podcast, so all my LSU fans would keep listening. But anyway, well, God bless you, brother.
We can.
That's it. I hope you have a great day. Hope your health continues to improve so you can keep doing the things you're doing, and appreciate your time on the podcast today.
Thank you, sir.
I want to thank Bruce for coming on the podcast this week. He has been an encouragement and an inspiration to me, and I am so grateful to see him healthy and able to communicate and do as well as he is and getting back into preaching. You know, when we go through something like this, it can be a little embarrassing. It can be something that can be difficult to talk about. And so for him to take this time to share with us, I hope you appreciate him and the courage it took for that. The vulnerability he had, but also I think there's a lot of love for other Christians who may be going through these same things. If you're going through difficulties in your life, I'm sure Bruce would be glad to talk to you, and I know your local church or your local minister would as well. We appreciate you being in here for this podcast this week, and until next time, may our God bless.